And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
You'll be the best, and you gotta pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you gotta do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodriguez, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Jordan, we are recording on Monday, December 18th, and
yes,
the Rams are in a playoff spot. I don't know what the odds were of that a couple months ago, but I'm going to say they weren't good. When I was remembering people talking just a few months ago how the Rams were going to tank this season so that they could get Caleb Williams, which doesn't that feel like a long time ago, back when people thought that USC was going to be good and Caleb Williams was going to win the Heisman again and the Rams were going to be like 2-15. Seems like a long time ago. But wow, Jordan, what a week this is. Big win over Washington elevates the Rams to 500 and a playoff spot, and a huge, huge game on Thursday against the New Orleans Saints. What do you know, Jordan? The people want to hear from you. What's the injury update? Are the Rams actually going to make the playoffs? Do they really have a shot at this thing?
They do have a shot. They have a better than 50% shot currently to make the playoffs, according to the New York Times playoff simulator. A really fun tool to use, by the way, I will say. I had a lot of fun messing around. You get to fill in little bubbles and stuff. Like, it's great. Love a good simulator in terms of helping me understand math that I don't know by myself. So 56% chance currently after Sunday's win over the Washington Commanders. If they beat the Saints Thursday night, that increases to 77% per this New York Times algorithm. If they beat the Giants in week 17, along with a win over the Saints, that increases to 96%. So it would all, the way to really look at this is they control as much of their destiny as you could possibly hope to control at this time of year. There is a small margin, obviously that 4%. Anything could happen. We've seen wild chaos with this team in the past, but winning the next two games leaves them in as about as much and solid control of their destiny as possible. Not even going to get to that 49ers game yet. We don't know what they're going to look like in terms of will they have decided to not play starters, things like that. So we don't know yet. But this is significant for a lot of reasons. And I've been writing about this the last couple of weeks and potting about this as well. Just like this incremental change over time that this team was really focused on this year, growth in small pieces, not all at once. Stacking, it's such a cliche, but in this case, it's so true. Stacking those blocks together. My column from a couple of weeks ago, work works. Stacking those pieces, focusing on the work itself versus what happens after or the bigger picture. This is a team that is very present. This is a team that is very connected. Regardless of the massive age gaps between some of the players and experience gaps between some of the players, this is a team that you feel this, the air in the locker room is not heavy. It's not still. It's kind of alive and moving, and you can feel growth happening week over week. A lot of that, I would say, is a huge credit to the players themselves, the type of players the Rams identified in that draft process and brought in that undrafted free agent process, in the veteran free agent process, in the vet minimum free agent process, and then the trade process. That was Kevin Dotson. And then, you know, the coaching. So it's always going to be a multifaceted. When a team is successful, there's always several reasons for it, similar to when a team is failing. But with this, it was that process oriented, looking inward to start and then getting really process oriented week over week over week with a collective of this coaching staff, some of the new hires blending with some of the older, more tenured people at these positions, and with, you know, Sean McVay. And I just think that it's been really interesting to watch, because you could see all of this unfold. It was like, first there was just this, first they had one quarterback on the roster and no kickers. Still questioning the kicking, but yes, we'll get to that in a minute.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
then it was like 44 rookies and new players on their roster. And you would hear just this kind of laughter from the outside. And I think, honestly, I think it was fair to like make light of what this roster looked like on the outside and on paper. I think that it was fair for those on the outside to look at Sean McVay when he would say how much he believed in the roster, or look at Kevin Demoff when he stood up in front of all of his employees and was like, I'm more excited about this team this year than I was last year, and say, bro, seriously? Like, I think that the reaction from the external, and I'm not counting, you know, the beat writers who are there every single day and see all of this change and all of this hard coaching and all of these things, I'm not counting those people, but the external people who aren't there every day, I think it was fair to be like, what are the Rams doing? And all of that stuff. I get that. It's like multiple things are true, which we love to say on this show and in life. It's like, but also this was possible, and they weren't being facetious or lying. And certainly, especially Sean McVay was not being facetious or almost like blinded by, I don't know what the even word, or naive, I guess. He wasn't being naive when he was saying, you know, you could really see that there's something that can become something here, but you had to put all the steps into place first, right? So you first saw the theory start to emerge, the schematic overhaul that actually was showing up as theory early in the year, right out of the gate. It's just they were losing games, so it's hard to notice from the outside looking in unless you're really parsing the tape and kind of doing the reporting and knowing what you're looking for and getting things explained to you by players and coaches. And then now you're seeing execution and scheme meet, and you're also seeing players who have now played a significant amount more snaps than they started the year with. You're seeing people grow up in front of you. I think that's something in terms of life, that's something really cool. You're watching Kyren Williams grow up in front of you. You're watching Puka Nacua grow up in front of you, all seven rookies with significant playing time. It's been really an interesting season, in that regard. And so I think that, it's when we think about the next couple of weeks and a chance at the playoffs, I said this on, the Athletic Football Show has this segment that's really great called Kiefer in the Beat. Zach Kiefer hosts a bunch of the beat writers around the league. I think it's great because fans ask me all the time, what can I do to learn more and to learn, you know, think about the game more. And I love getting those questions because I say, like, watch other teams. You know, if you thought the Rams were going to be 2-15, look at the 2-15 teams, or look at the teams that are really struggling. You'd have to be that bad for the entire year. And listen to other beat writers and read other beat writers and the people who are on the ground and seeing things happen very incrementally, but putting the pieces together to build a picture. And you know, I was saying it's just a fascinating thing to look around the league and see, this team is now, of course, very much in the playoff conversation, but what I think they really got that they needed this year happened a few weeks ago against Cleveland and happened against Baltimore, even though that was a loss, where they found the thing within themselves that they needed to find in order to say, hey, we have hit that step. We can say we have improved in a way that doesn't necessarily reflect, you know, when you look 10 years from now and you look at the win-loss chart or anything like that. But the team that you see, especially when things are going right, we're going to get to some of the things that go wrong and some of the self-inflicted errors that pop up consistently and all of that in a second. But when things are going right, you can see that this team is truly a collective of all of the various identities and growth of a lot of different people who are all functioning at this level together and cohesively. And from the coaching to some of the players that are emerging to the ideas that you see manifest with the scheme, it's a reflection of what's actually happening. And I just think that that's an interesting thing. And no bigger test really for the, you know, the more tangible stuff, the awards and the recognition and the win loss chart and the potential of the postseason, like that manifests Thursday night. Right. But everything that they really needed to get from each other and themselves this season, I think they've already gotten.
Yeah. Such a great way to put it in the big picture, Jordan. And the only thing I would add to that is what kind of piques my interest in this season too, is that this is just the first chapter, or maybe you could say the first book in the next anthology, right? Of what's going to happen.
What's that word, Rich? Setup year. We loved using that word. We loved using that word at the beginning of in April.
Right. And it isn't. And we don't know that the next chapter, the next book hasn't been written yet. We don't know whether or not how this is going to progress, if it's going to progress in a positive way. You look at it and you say it should. If you have a team that's 7-7, potentially, I mean, I think you could say easily 9-8 this season when they get to the end of it. Are they going to be able to build off of that? I don't know. We'll talk about that in a few months. But to me, this is, you know, we almost closed the book on the previous anthology, right? You look at 2017 to 2022 is the way that I would put it. And then that book has been written. We had a beginning, middle, and end, and now it's almost like starting the new book. And where is this going to go? And it's fascinating for all those reasons that you talked about, Jordan, to see the players develop in real time, to see them mature, to see the, you know, the metamorphosis that Sean McVay is trying to put himself through personally within his coaching staff. Fascinating stuff to watch. And of course, Jordan, nobody chronicles it better than you do. But I did notice, even just watching Sean McVay and in his post-game press conferences, the difference from last year when he just, I mean, you wrote about it so well during the offseason, but you watched him last year and it just looked like a guy who, you know, I don't want to say he had lost it, but in a certain sense, I think he had, whatever, however you want to define it. I don't think it was there. And you watch him now and you listen to him now, and it seems, you know, much more like what we're used to in the past. And I do think that filters down. And then you just got to give the players so much credit, because mm-hmm. ultimately they're the ones who have to get it done on the field. These guys coming through in big ways. And it's been impressive to watch. I didn't get to join you after the Saints game, but I thought that was a super impressive game, even in a defeat. And in many ways, I thought more impressive than the game that we watched on Sunday, even though the Rams won that game. But this is going to be a big one, Jordan, because, you beat the Saints, you're putting yourself right there. I mean, that's a team that's right there with you in the playoff race. If you win that game, put yourself in good position going into the Giants game. And then, of course, we don't know what's going to happen with the 49ers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
So for people who are going to, I assume most people are going to be listening to this before Thursday, but where are the Rams going into this game? Short game situations, yes. always tough. And it's the same for both teams. We need to say that up front. But health-wise, guys coming back, Rob Havenstein, anybody who might have got nicked up during the game, where are they with that stuff? What do you expect this team to look like on Thursday?
Yeah, I squeezed in a last question there for Sean McVay post-game on Sunday. And I asked him if Rob Havenstein would be back Thursday. He said, yes, they do expect him back. He's been dealing with a groin injury. Tough moment for them yesterday when we're recording Monday, so yesterday, but I always try to say Sunday for those of you who listen a little bit later in the week. But Sunday, they lost Akello Witherspoon to a groin injury right before what ended up almost being a hugely significant sequence of plays should the Rams have lost that game between the missed 43-yard attempt by Lucas Havrisik, which we'll get to in a minute. I asked Sean McVay about that this morning and about their evaluations at kicker in general. Between that and then the two explosive plays on the other side, one the touchdown to Terry McLaurin against Darion Kendrick, and then the other, another Terry McLaurin play, this time downed at the one, that ended up being like kind of a double-edged sword because the Commanders did get a touchdown off of it, but the Rams held them up at the goal line for such a significant amount of time that it did help the offense on the other side. And in a way, you obviously don't want to allow the touchdown that came on the fourth down. And then the pass interference that was on the 4th and 7, like you don't want either of those things to occur. Taking that, it was like, okay, well, at least you did take this amount of time off the clock. Akello was not on the field for those plays. And previously, he was on the field and playing very well. And he's been really steady for them all year. He's taken the ball away. He leads them in interceptions. So having him Thursday will be really important. Sean McVay said he is expected to go, but it's obviously, you know, a soft tissue injury. It is something to keep an eye on. Further complicating this is that Trey Tomlinson, who is at this point a depth corner, but is a rookie that they drafted this past April. He is dealing with a thigh injury. I believe that was suffered on special teams. And so that's significant because they don't have a ton of depth there. Sean Jolly is on the roster, but he's more of an inside slot corner. Kobe Durant would be the guy who would come in on the outside. He had a huge play. He blocked the point after attempt. I talked to him about it, by the way. He had some great perspective. He's lost some playing time at first because he had the shoulder stinger, and that hindered him quite a bit. But then the Rams started playing a more safety heavy sub package look. So you're seeing more Quentin Lake, who's played outstanding. You're seeing a little more Russ Yeast in sub packages versus in that too high. And that's been a successful sub package for them. That it's sort of a variation of their dime linebacker and their nickel. And so Kobe has sort of found himself in diminished playing time, but he talked to me Sunday night in the locker room about making the most of the opportunities that he does get. And he certainly did that with that blocked point after attempt. Pretty impressive play that really significantly, I think, altered the mental momentum, if not the physical momentum of the game at that point. So he would be a potential depth on the outside, but then you're kind of really lacking behind Akello if that groin injury does pop up again. And other than that, though, I don't want to jinx it, but this is like a pretty healthy Rams team relative to the season. Matthew Stafford and Cooper Kupp recovered on the fly from their respective thumb and ankle injuries. And so even though you seem to be seeing more tape on Matthew Stafford's arms and thumb and wrist and elbow and tricep and all this, every single week you seem to be seeing more and more tape just show up on his various, you know, arms. You are seeing him still sling it around like a top quarterback in this league, which he's playing like right now. Cooper Kupp really had a couple of strong, you know, he looks more like himself. That ankle injury was really bugging him, but the short week is really brutal. I think the NFL is pretty cruel for doing this to any team. It doesn't matter who it is, but to any team in this late in the season. And it is going to be brutal for them to quote unquote, turn their bodies over. It's like their way of putting it before Thursday. And that's especially, you know, as lopsided as Sunday looked in some places, it was a really physical game up front. The line was really put to the test by that interior on Washington's D line. And it was still a pretty physical game. So this is going to be tough. The Saints are going to come in and again, be physical right back. They're dealing with a little bit of their own chaos here. Some of it, seems a little self-inflicted. They're dealing with some injuries, some questions. I've been reading, through some of the coverage over there. You know, some questions about the, you know, coming up in terms of the franchise overall. And so it's interesting, but this is a team that they're dangerous. I think that they've shown this. They can be dangerous and they can be physical. And the defense at the beginning of the year was playing really well. So we'll kind of see how this goes. The Rams couldn't hope for, I think, better health this time of year. But at the same time, it's a short week and anything kind of goes on a short week like that, especially in prime time.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I don't know. I was glancing at the transcript. Tutu Atwell also.
Tutu Atwell cleared the concussion protocol, so he's expected to play. That's also good news for the Rams.
Yeah, and by the way, I'll just put in my vote that Sean Jolly should play in the game before Christmas. If you could pass that along to the coaching staff, I'd appreciate it.
I love that. Only you, Rich.
I know. I don't know how to take that. But no, actually, I do know how to take that.
That is great.
Fascinating game. I hate the Thursday night games. I really do. I understand why they're played. And I know they're never going to go away. But like you said, Jordan, especially when you talk about, late December, it's not fair. I want to see this. And especially these games that have such huge playoff implications as this one does. You want the teams at their best. And I don't know whether you can say that happens in a situation like this. But, it's never going to change. So I'm not going to spend any more air on it. But one thing that we can spend more air on is the kicking situation, Jordan, because yes. So, this has obviously been a saga for the Rams and Lucas Haversick is had some issues there. What I was doing while you were answering part of that last question was looking up the specific wording that Sean McVay used in his quote today when he was asked about that. And he did make specific reference to, Lucas kind of bouncing back on Thursday, something to that effect. He also made a lot of references to evaluating the situation and that sort of thing. I'll tell you one thing, Jordan. They showed Sean McVay on the telecast as that field goal was soaring majestically to the right. That did not look like a guy who was going to stick with his kicker. That's not reporting. I am not putting that on any type of social media.
He's pretty easy to read, though. He doesn't have it. We joke about this a lot. He doesn't really have much of a poker face. You pretty much know where he's at when he's there. So
it didn't look to me like a guy who was like, yeah, I feel good about this situation. So, we'll see what happens on Thursday. But Jordan, we've talked about this. Like, you can't have your kicker's never going to be perfect. There's always going to be. And Sean talked a little bit about this in his answer, but when these games are so big and you're getting into games that literally define your playoff chances, you especially those 45 and in, you can't be missing those. I mean, things can always happen. You can have a bad snap, whatever. But, it looked like, and even the broadcasters were talking about it and how they were watching warmups and he was kind of, drifting off to the right. So it's clearly this was not just an issue with a snap or a hold or something like that. So I don't know, Jordan. I mean, is there anything they can do here? I mean, clearly there's not a high level of confidence, but the game is in just a couple days here at, I don't know. Is there anything they can do?
Well, they could bring in somebody. If today's Monday, they could bring somebody in Monday evening. Then you have to get them up to speed with the entire snap and hold operation. You have one real practice, which is Tuesday, and a light walkthrough or jog through at some other point in the week. So it's a short week, really hard to actually make a change. They also, they went through a weird situation with Mason Crosby before eventually cutting him, where he was signed to the practice squad, and it was sort of openly stated by some of the insiders who reported that information that he would be elevated. Then Sean McVay said he wasn't likely to be elevated. Then the Rams elevated him anyway on Saturday. And then after the Baltimore game, where he was not active, Mason Crosby was not active. And Lucas Haversick, by the way, was nails in that game. So I don't want to discredit that game for him. That was a really solid thing. But as Sean McVay said, he made some reference or allusion to given their word to some people who were instrumental in bringing Mason in. He had been sort of on their radar through previous parts of the year. So it sounds to me like they were just sticking by their word when they said, hey, you will be elevated. The whole situation was weird. The one thing that did stand out was Lukas Hevrysik did win the quote unquote miniature kicking competition that week. Apparently he kicked really, really well. We don't see it in practice, but he kicked really well in practice. And then obviously was nails in that Baltimore game, but then you can't miss under 45 yards in the NFL. And Sean McVay said that himself. If I asked him about Lukas today and about the full evaluation of the kicker in general, they've gone through five, six different players at this point. And he said, obviously, that the one that stands out, I thought, because of the magnitude of that kick, especially given the circumstances where you're inside of 45, you got a chance to really go up where it's a three possession game there. 31 points in that situation would have made it a totally different feel toward the latter part of that game. And he's like, I think you want to be careful not to overreact to one kick, but it was a big kick. And then he said that he was impressed, you know, like he should have been with Lukas the previous week, but there's some inconsistency there that's concerning, and it's been a concern all year, and the margins of error are so slim. He talked also today, I asked him about the entire evaluation process, and it's just been, there hasn't seemed to be, to me, where I have the issue is there hasn't been seemed to be a cohesive identity of what they want to accomplish at the position, other than the guy has to be cheap. Although I would be interested, and I might do this, is go up and add all of the game contracts and all of the little weekly elevation contracts and all of the little vet minimum contracts of all of the guys that they've had on this roster, and then some of the rookie salaries and the undrafted free agent salaries, to see kind of what it equals for this one single season. And you still are not any clearer than you were before on who your long-term guy is going to be. So you spent the money anyway. I mean, it's not as much money. They were not going to pay high dollar for a kicker. We know that. Agree or disagree, they just were not going to do it. So, but in terms of some of the mid-range, you know, situations or whatever, you still don't have an answer really long-term at this position. And oh, by the way, you've also spent money this year because of all the guys that you're bringing in and then letting go and then elevating and then de-elevate. And it's just, it adds up after a certain point on the spreadsheet. So, but there's been a lack of consistency too with the identity of what they want to accomplish. Okay. You had a guy who could hit the really long range kicks. All right. So now you're putting other guys in a situation where you're not able to hit long range kicks, which Sean McVay was talking about today, about some of those possibly go situations on fourth down that instead turn into really long misses by Brett Maher. That is also an issue. So then there's not a super cohesive, okay, then what do you look for the next guy? Is it range? Okay. Hevrysik seems to have a big leg, but he's missing from under 45. And it's just, there's this lack of like figuring out, okay, what do you really need in this kicker? Do you need them to be automatic from a shorter distance? Well, that's why they went out and got the rookies that they got, because they were really solid, accurate, short distance kickers. Okay, well, neither of those two guys are here anymore. You know, so it's just been, it's been inconsistent, right, in accordance as well with, and I want to say pre-buy much more so than post-buy, as well as with the and go situations. I think they're conjoined together, frankly. In not just the play calling strategy, but also the identity that you need to establish a kicker. And also you're working with a limited pool of candidates. If you decide you're not going to pay a kicker, that is fine, right? But you better pick the right guy, and you better keep him on your roster cheap for long enough to understand if he's, you know, your guy or not your guy, without putting him in those types of situations. But also you got to pick the right guy. You can't just keep going through this. And then they've had issues at long snapper because Alex Ward is dealing with an injury. And so they bring in Carson Tinker, who's experienced, but at the same time, now your entire snap and hold operation is completely different. So it all kind of starts to add up if you don't have consistency there. And you might think, wow, they're really just like honing in on this kicking situation. Well, the margins are so small this time of year. This is December football. And by the way, credit to the Rams, they are playing meaningful December football. But this is where the margins, this is where you get exposed in those types of margins where you still have, they've improved in every other area. I have yet to see week to week to week a cohesive identity emerging in that kicking unit specifically.
Right, right. I mean, Jordan, you would have to say, I think that Tinker is an appropriate name for the work that they've done at the special teams unit.
Am I right? You're on one today.
Thank you. But
you're just on a roll.
Yes. But it's a great point, Jordan, that probably shouldn't be lost in all of this. But the fact that we are talking about the Rams kicking, you know, being an issue in late December is actually a positive in a certain sense, because that means that these games are meaningful enough that you're actually worried about how the kicking is going to go in some of these late game situations. So I hadn't thought of it like that. That's a really good point. But yeah, they need to decide. Like, you can't, I mean, this is late in the season. You can't go into a playoff situation not being able to trust a kicker or trust a kicker in certain situations. So I don't know what they're going to do here, but you know, if there's one thing I know about this podcast is we will never stop talking about kicking. That's one thing that we know.
One might say we always be talking about kicking.
Always be talking about kicking. I feel like I've heard that before. One last thing I wanted to touch on, Jordan, and I'd want to get your thoughts on this too, because this is a player who you've been tracking very closely throughout the season, was Kyren Williams. And a couple of fumble issues came up during this game, which you talk about another area that you can't have happen in late important games. You can't have the ball on the ground. I look at that situation and I'm not particularly concerned about that if I'm the Rams, and I'm talking about the bigger picture. I'm not talking about the two fumbles in the game. That was a big concern. It doesn't seem to be a part of his makeup, I don't know what was going on yesterday. It wasn't great. But the thing that I was struck with, Jordan, is the fact that Sean McVay he went to Royce Freeman pretty quick after the first fumble. But Kyren Williams was there in the game in important situations in the fourth quarter, including when it was down to an 8-point game and they still needed a couple first downs to clinch the game. I thought that was a smart move by who I assume it was Sean's decision to do that. And I thought that was a smart move, and B, indicated to me that the Rams still have that confidence that this isn't going to be like a multi-week situation for him. What's your sense on that? Just, you know, having tracked his entire, you know, the short career that he's had thus far, but you've seen the whole thing. Were you surprised that happened? And like, what level of concern, if any, did, you know, do you think they should have?
Yeah, I was really surprised, because I think that Kyren is one of the more conscientious players that I've covered. He just is very on details like that. And I think that, and he said this, so I'm not putting words in his mouth or anything. It was a loss of focus a little bit for him. And it's like, there's a difference. You could see the thing that I love about watching him run is that there is such a, he has such a like a verve for the act of running the ball, right? Like, there is such a, I don't want to say joy, because that takes away some of the punishment he's inflicting when he does run. Right. But there is sort of this, like I think verve is the right way to describe it, the act of running the ball. Right. Yeah. And he just really is dudes into it. Right. and so it's, you could see a couple of times where it veered a little bit into, there was maybe a little too much looseness when, and the Commanders, I mean, in certain cases too, you know, you have to credit making a play on the ball and those types of things. But I think when you're a young player, you are always trying to understand what that line is between focus and high level attention to detail. You kind of see it with Puka sometimes, some of the drops that he's had where he's almost been so eager to get the catch and go run and take the contact that he's turned his body before actually making the catch, because he's ready to go inflict some damage and make a play. And the eagerness to do that, I think sometimes you get a little, you can lose some of that conscientiousness and technique. And in that way, I think Kyren was alluding to that, on Sunday night when we talked to him in the locker room post game, was he knows what he has to do. And I hearken back to early in the year, there were a couple misconnections between himself and Matthew Stafford on a couple short passes. And you could tell those were potentially going to be pretty significant gains. And they just, the two of them just seemed to get ahead of themselves a little bit. And there was a drop. And then, you know, and after that, you did not see one issue from Kyren. So I have no doubt that this is something that he fixes. This was super uncharacteristic of him. I think that the interesting thing was that I think was signaled how important they think he is and how valuable he legitimately is. I put out some statistics on Threads the other day of what the EPA per play and the success rate per play actually is when he's on the field versus when he's not on the field. It is a dramatic change for the positive when he is on the field. And they know that. And he wants to be that player for them. So I think I don't expect anything but him to lock that down a little bit better. I think that there were two things that came to mind when I watched them close out the game was first, they were closing out the game with Kyren Williams, as they should. And that's not to take anything away from Royce Freeman, but Kyren Williams, to put him back in that moment is also reflective of what he's done for them this season, not just the mistakes that he had made. It was more reflective of what he actually can be and the player he is for this offense when they want to assert and run the ball in a known run situation, who he can be for them and who he has been for them in that situation. The other thing I noticed that I thought was really interesting was they spelled Tyler Higbee almost for that situation. They were managing Tyler Higbee snaps a lot better. In games where they manage Tyler Higbee snaps a lot better, they get Davis Allen involved more in the run blocking surface. So Tyler's not taking that full share. Tyler Higbee is more effective in the passing game. Well, then at the end of the game, when they're in a known run situation, what did I see was that I call it crash. They call it doom or blast. I like the word crash because it is quite literally a large human crashing into other large humans. But getting Tyler in motion on the front to the front side of the run play, which helps disguise and also block for their duo plays. I've talked about this a lot on this podcast and written about it. And it's one of the new schematic evolutions that Sean McVay installed that other teams are now copying. We know this. We talked about this on this pod. Tyler was in there for that first down, that first run, which I think was 8 or 9 yards on that last series.
Yeah.
And that run in itself, because of the down and distance that it created, it forced Ron Rivera to burn a timeout immediately. So that specific run with that blocking and then the first down after that, you had a smarter use of your veteran tight end to maximize efficiency in the run and the pass game. You had a running back. You went back to a running back that you trusted. You closed the game out and asserted on the ground in the moment where you needed to. To me, that's a lot of growth. And it reflects certainly more willingness to lean into those types of things and to assert in that way, more so than previously in the game where the Rams, it was like, consecutive passes in the red zone. And Sean McVay talked about that at length today about how that first series where he called the three passes, and particularly from the 4 yard line, he was really pissed at himself for that. And you want that back, obviously, as a play caller. And I think all of us saw it in real time, like, you're at the 4, what the heck are you doing? Like, kind of a thing. But you see at the end there, closing it out, and you see it in other situations later in the game, closing it out in that way. It's more proof of concept, not just for the play caller who, should not abandon those things in certain situations, but also more proof of concept for the running back who probably needed a little bit of a nod to his, confidence late in the game there, to the veteran tight end in the usage. It showed an adjustment in ways that I think was a little bit more discreet than previously in the game. And it showed, I think, a little bit more of a maturity in the conceptualized pieces of this offense overall and being able to do that with all those moving parts in that moment. You noticed the shift to duo in training camp, which you couldn't report at the time per the parameters and rules of your credential of access to seeing those things. You'd notice the shift to duo. Kyren Williams had an outstanding camp. And then you started noticing the shift toward that when they were starting to game plan for Seattle in earnest. And I bring it up because I'm delighted to have seen his progress and him coming into his own as the player that I think we knew he could be.
Yeah, fantastic. And that's why I wanted to get your thoughts on it, because you have tracked all of that so well. I mean, even going back to his draft year and all of that. So he's been a fascinating player for me to watch, and I've learned so much about him just from reading your stuff. So I'm eager to see kind of how that develops over the course of time here.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Jordan, let's wrap up if we would. Didn't talk much about the defense, and I'm not really sure what to ask you. I mean, I really just kind of want to throw it generally to you. I mean,
yeah. They blew it on two big plays.
That's pretty much the 48 yard pass play, setting up one touchdown. And then what was the other one? 29.
Yeah. And that the coverage breaks the last 2 weeks, I think, have been concerning. This is a team that, you know, says it is built to cap explosives. They're playing tighter, though. So you're going to, you know, sometimes it's going to happen where players going to get behind you. This was the case in the, a couple of the breaks over the last, you know, couple of weeks. But I will say, like, a couple big breaks, they almost lost control of that one Sunday. But it goes back even further too. They should have been probably up by like at least 24 points at halftime, based on the way they were moving the ball, minus the fumbles, and minus that really bad red zone sequence to start the game that was a field goal instead of a touchdown. They should have been up by far more than that. However, this is also a team where I think you do have to worry sometimes about sort of like the dam opening up at the wrong moment because of, in some parts, a lack of experience. A week ago in Baltimore, one of them was a bad play call, and then a couple more were execution or flat out getting beat. A combination of pressure and coverage. And then this last week, you know, you do see that the inexperience in some areas, and then sometimes just a lack of, I think, players who will be around for the long term. You think, okay, they've got this, but, you know, they've got this game, but, and then you sort of, sometimes these things have happened to them, and certainly in those fourth quarter scenarios. And so I think that's something to keep an eye on, but it's also like, you kind of hold multiple truths in that where you're like, well, but you know, what was to be expected kind of situation against with some of the personnel available and in the, like I said, the pass rush. And then also like some of the players on the other side. I mean, Terry McLaurin obviously is a great player. You cannot have those breaks, those breakdowns to that level. And then you also can't have penalties on fourth down. You can't be in a situation like that. So it's kind of, again, like it always is, it's a mixed bag of things, but two really, truly big break plays that sort of made this one harder than it had to be. And then on the other side, not capitalizing and then turning the ball over also made it harder than it had to be. Missing a field goal made it harder than it had to be. So as we say, much probably to the annoyance of some at this point, all of this can be true at the same time. And it is, because it's football. But yeah, I think that, you know, defense pitching a shutout in the first, again, it was kind of like the Commanders, you didn't really have too lofty of expectations coming into the game based on how they'd produced throughout the previous part of the season. But still, you need to beat the teams definitively that you need to beat. And other than those two big breaks and in those explosive pass plays, against the Rams secondary, against the corners. That's something to keep an eye on, though. That could be problematic down the stretch here. Again, we talk about margins. You really need to keep an eye on that because it's happened the last 2 weeks. And in both cases, really outstanding players were in terms of Terry McLaurin and then also Lamar and Zay Flowers. Like, those are outstanding players in this league, but also the timing of when they happen, the situations and when they happen, third and 17, then they were, the fourth down, the penalty, like touchdown on fourth and three, those types of things. You can't let those tight yards, those late in the down scenarios to happen, especially when the margins are so slim. So that's what I kind of worry. But with the defense, it's like the same stuff that's been true all year is still true. Like,
yeah,
they need more players in certain areas. That much is clear. They've improved in a lot of areas. A couple of rookies playing outstanding, Kobe Turner, Byron Young, Michael Hoyt, I think, had one of his best games yesterday. It doesn't mean that they don't need an edge rusher. I'm just saying he had a really good game. You're seeing Quentin Lake emerge. You're seeing, Jordan Fuller kind of get back to playing solid after a tough game in Baltimore. John Johnson, you're seeing Akella Withers. You're seeing improvement in some areas. You're seeing about the same in other areas. I think that was to be expected coming in. So unless you're on the outside and then you were like thinking that teams are going to, I remember seeing tweets like, oh, Rams are going to need to score 40 a game. So this defense is not that. So I think that if we can have some perspective here, it doesn't make any of the things, the criticisms that I discussed, less important. Those are significant and important, of course. Right. This is not that defense in terms of kind of where they stand at this point, based on the construct of that roster.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the big picture, another 20 or under game on defense, which is, you've talked about it so much. That's where you want to land. And it's pretty reliable that if they do that, they're going to put themselves in a good position to win the game. So yeah, I have the same, big picture. I have the same concerns. I think those areas are where things are going to hinge for the Rams over the next couple of weeks here. And if they're going to have any shot at winning a playoff game, things like that. But you're right. It hasn't really changed at all. The same things you're talking about are the same things that you kind of talked about in the first couple of weeks of the season. So for better or worse, that's kind of where they are right now. But again, sitting here with a 500 record, with three games left in the season, sitting in a playoff spot, all things considered, not too bad if you're a Rams fan.
Kind of a fun season, Rich, honestly. Like, it's fun. Yeah.
It's not. And I think that's kind of what, you talked about Kevin's, comments early in the season. Obviously it's fun when you have the super team and you're expected to win the Super Bowl and all of that. But even that comes with the expectations are so high that it's almost like you have to play so well just to meet those expectations. But then you have a season like this where the expectations are so low and you look at your team and you think, I think there's some potential here. I think this could be something that's really interesting. Like, those can be more gratifying or interesting in a way than some of those seasons where you're expected to win the division and expected to whatever. So I totally get what Kevin was saying there. And I think even as a, somebody watching the games, this has been a compelling season in a lot of ways. And like I said, I think just the first chapter that's being written in whatever this turns into. So I'm not saying it's going to end in a Super Bowl championship like the last one did, but I'm fascinated to see where it does go from here. So the one thing I know, Jordan, without any question at all, is that you will be on top of everything. Nobody does a better job of keeping Rams fans informed, not only on a day-to-day basis, but on a week-to-week basis and a month-to-month basis and a year-to-year basis, all bases that are there to be covered. Thank you for that, Jordan. And thank you to all our subscribers as we close in on the end of the year here. Thank you so much for being with us, for sticking with us. I know you have to make decisions with your money and all of that. We really appreciate you subscribing and hanging in there with us. And we hope that you'll join us in 2024. And Jordan, if anybody, we have a few more days before the holidays here. If you're looking for a gift idea for that sports fan in your life, boy, do I have some good news for you, because you can go to theathletic.com/11personnel, get yourself a subscription if you don't have one, get a gift subscription, and make Jordan very happy, because you will get her favorite thing in the entire world, which is what?
a great discount. You guys, as the year closes, holy cow, by the way, as the year closes, you can still, I don't know why they keep letting us do this, but you can still get my favorite thing in the world, which is a great discount when you subscribe to The Athletic through the 11 Personnel podcast. Got some really fun stuff coming for you guys in the new year. Some Rams related, some not Rams related, but I still think that you will be very, very interested all the same. Thank you guys. Happy holidays for whatever holiday you celebrate. I hope you're having a warm one. And Rich, it was so great to have you back on today. It is nice. We're talking about the run game. I told listeners this last week that something involving the run game was going to happen against Washington because the next week would be a Rich Hammond episode. So
yes.
Way to stay on brand. Very proud of you in that regard. But you guys, I hope you are taking care of each other. I hope you're taking care of yourselves. Hope you're staying caffeinated and hydrated. We'll see you after week 16, which in this case is on Thursday.
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.